Star Quality Care, Inc. This is Mr. Mack.
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Pat Mack of the law firm Hennessy and Roach. I'm here on behalf of my client proudly, the appellants in this case, Five Star Quality Care. This case is an appeal from the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court that pertains to a work injury involving one of my client's workers named Linda Carlson. It is undisputed that on February 17, 2013, Ms. Carlson sustained a work accident arising out of and in the course of her employment with my client. What happened subsequent is what divides the parties and why we're here today. I have three separate issues which I brought forth to the court today, all of which I think are very valid. But one, namely, I believe that the court would have the most interest in that it might cause this court to interpret a statute that I believe has not already been interpreted. And that is whether Ms. Carlson's sudden and catastrophic stroke of October 14, 2015 that is wholly unrelated to the work accident has any impact on her entitlement to disability benefits under the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Act. The applicable statute is Nebraska Revised Statute 48-121. Primarily, at least in terms of the dispute between the parties, it would be subsection 1 of that statute. That statute broadly defines temporary disability and makes no distinction within that subsection between what would be categorized as temporary total disability and permanent total disability. At the end of that subsection, the legislature, in writing the statute, put nothing in the subdivision shall require payment of compensation after disability shall cease. If you look at subsection 2 of that same statute, the legislature does go on to define when temporary disability ceases, but is, if you look at the statutory scheme in 48-121, there is no definition of when and under what circumstances permanent and total disability would cease. Now, this court in...
Is it possible that that's because of the nature of what permanent disability is?
Perhaps. My interpretation of it would be that the legislature did intend for permanent and total disability to cease. Under the Act, if a workers' compensation injured worker would suffer permanent and total disability, their disability benefits would cease if they would pass away, unfortunately, for reasons unrelated to the work accident. The Workers' Compensation Act is intended to provide benefits to the injured worker based on the adverse economic effects caused by the work injury. That would cease by a death that is not related to a work accident.
Do you think your analogy to death is a good analogy in this factual circumstance? Didn't this employee's permanent disability continue?
That's a question of statutory interpretation, but I would also mention that I don't necessarily believe that the trial record would show that the disability that Ms. Carlson is continuing to suffer is related to the work accident. The date that the court determined to be maximum medical improvement is actually approximately 6 days prior to the stroke. There's very little evidence in the appellant's contention that a permanent disability. What we do know is that after the stroke, which occurred again 6 days after the date of maximum medical improvement, Ms. Carlson is no longer able to speak. She's confined to a wheelchair. She is unable to take care of herself after this accident. So it's my contention, Your Honor, that there is no evidence that the disability directly correlated to the accident continues after that stroke.
Whose burden would it be to put such evidence in the record?
Your Honor, I believe it would be my contention that it would be the plaintiff's burden of proof. I believe the plaintiff's burden would be to prove that disability would continue after that.
All right. Is your issue with a finding of fact in this case?
In this particular situation, I believe it is a question of law because we have not, or the legislature did not define when permanent total disability would cease, that it would require interpretation from this court on whether or not she's entitled to ongoing disability benefits. Now, in going back to the way this court interprets statutes, it is very well established this court interprets these Nebraska workers' compensation statutes liberally in order to promote the beneficent purpose of the act. However, this court has also acknowledged that there is a presumption that the legislature intended a sensible rather than absurd result in enacting a statute and its amendments. I think it would be, in my opinion, absurd to assume that the legislature didn't intend permanent total disability to cease under any circumstances. I had already used the analogy of a situation where an individual passes away unrelated to the work accident. That would be a situation where I believe the legislature would intend for permanent total disability benefits to cease because the disability has ceased. That would be very easy for the legislature if they wanted to only create a situation where permanent total disability benefits would cease upon death, write that into the statute as the definition. The fact that it's left, that the legislature has defined the end of total but not permanent, I believe has they intended to leave it up to this court to define under a certain factual scenario whether or not permanent total disability for a individual would.
Can you suggest any other factual situations to us to help us with this?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a case I believe in my office that would also kind of apply where an injured injured worker is undergoing a course of treatment for a work accident and then all of a sudden is diagnosed with very severe COPD, lung cancer, and the like, and then that in and of itself would, I suppose, increase the restrictions, impairment, and disability of that person to the point where the disability that they're suffering from is related to that unrelated condition, unrelated to work, as opposed to the work accident.
Counsel, do we have cases where an employee is receiving permanent disability benefits and then has another compensable accident?
Yes.
And what do we do in cases like that?
Well, I believe it depends a lot on the facts and a lot on the medical evidence and whether or not it's a...
But it doesn't cancel out the first one.
It could, I believe, under certain circumstances, if it's deemed by medical providers to be a new and separate injury. I believe it would actually then perhaps cut off the liability for that.
Are you hinting at a superseding cause?
Yes, Your Honor. And in courts have issued a lot of the case law in any jurisdiction dealing with superseding cause pertains to a re-injury of the same body part. And that's not what we have here. I believe in my question that, you know, this injured worker injured her right hip. We're not saying necessarily that the stroke had any impact on the hip, it had the impact on her entire body, which in turn completely impacts her loss of earning capacity. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal. If anybody has any other questions, I ask the court to reverse, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fix, good morning to you.
Good morning to each of you, Your Honors. My name is Daniel Fix, and I appear on behalf of the appellees, Linda Krauss, Lori Hoyt, who are co-guardians and co-conservators of Ms. Linda Carlson. To address the appellees' main argument, as I take it, the trial court made a mistake in finding that the subsequent stroke had no impact on her entitlement to permanent and total disability benefits. I would note that the appellees in their brief have made a sub-argument where they framed The issue is though this court is charged with answering the question as to whether an intervening or subsequent injury to a different part, excuse me, wholly unrelated to the work accident, but having a significantly debilitating impact on the claimant's permanent disability status and earning power, severs the right to permanent disability benefit. I don't think that's the issue before the court. The fact of the matter is that the trial court made a factual determination that Ms. Carlson attained maximum medical improvement before her stroke.
I beg your pardon, invoke some of the statutory words, but not all of them. Is there a tension between MMI and permanent?
I'm not certain that I understand the question, Your Honor.
Is MMI always permanent or sometimes permanent?
There could be situations where someone achieves MMI and has no permanency.
Okay.
But that's not our case. The judge specifically found that Ms. Carlson had a total loss of earning power as of the time she attained MMI and before.
So she was total, right? Used the word total and permanent, sorry, right, before the stroke.
Exactly.
It's the finding.
Exactly. That is the factual finding by the court. So the key point here is that Ms. Carlson's loss was determined and ascertainable as of MMI, October 8th, 2000.
As it happens under these facts.
Correct.
It was ascertainable under the facts of this case.
Correct. And so her loss, her earning capacity as of the attainment of MMI was permanently zero. Her earning power was not affected by her stroke, although it certainly had debilitating effects upon her in other ways, physical and
are there ever situations where a cataclysmic event happening after the MMI would supersede an award, for example?
Off the top of my head, I can't really think of a situation where that would be the case. The Act is designed in order to alleviate the economic effects of industrial or work accidents. That, assuming the person is at MMI and has permanency, that remains, whether there is some subsequent or intervening event.
So you're reminding us it has to do with earning power.
That's correct. That's what this case is.
And that's not synonymous with your physical situation.
No, but it's dependent upon the physical
right.
situation. I mean, that's the primary factor,
right.
I would say, in addition to some others, that determines earning power loss. And in this case, Ms. Carlson, all three physicians that were asked to opine about permanency and maximum medical improvement indicated that she had obtained maximum medical improvement, albeit the physicians gave different dates, but certainly no later than October 8th of 2015, some days before her stroke. And each of those three physicians also indicated that there were permanent effects from this. Dr. Reckmeyer, the treating surgeon, set forth very specific permanent restrictions and indicated that these would be lifelong restrictions. This all predates the stroke.
And there was a permanent rating percentage, is that correct?
There are two in the record, Your Honor.
35 and 37 or something like that?
Yeah, Dr. Diamant, one of the Appellee's retained experts, opined that she had a 30% body as a whole impairment rating. And the party stipulated that Ms. Carlson sustained a body as a whole injury and that she had impairment. And the court accepted that stipulation. Well, A second impairment rating was rendered by another of the appellee's retained experts, Dr. Morgan LaHolt, who characterized the impairment rating in terms of the lower extremity and assigned a 37% impairment rating. But it's important to note, I think, that in assigning that rating, he indicated that he was utilizing the AMA guides, the evaluation of permanent impairment, sixth edition, relying on the hip grid, a whole body condition. So whether he described it as a 30%, 37% for the lower extremity, I think the key is just simply that she was at MMI and that she has some permanent impairment.
So the stroke creates more impairment. How's that impacted?
The stroke creates more physical and communicative impairment for Ms. Carlson, but she's already got a 0% ability to earn. So the stroke didn't affect that. That, according to the trial court's factual finding, existed before the stroke, and it exists today. The notion that we should treat Ms. Carlson as though she died, essentially, on October 14th of 15 when she had her stroke, appellees would suggest, I think is really kind of a ghoulish and, frankly, kind of an absurd result. Ms. Carlson appeared at her trial. She has some ability to communicate, and I can assure you that she's very much alive today. I can't find any basis or, frankly, any real logic in suggesting that Ms. Carlson's entitlement to workers' compensation disability benefits should cease because of her tragic, unfortunate circumstances in obtaining or incurring this stroke. The fact, as I said, remains that her earning power was eviscerated before the stroke. The stroke doesn't change that. She has that same 0% impairment or 0% ability to earn today. She did before her stroke. It's really, in my mind, the stroke is frankly irrelevant. These were factual, and I just to kind of address quickly one or two of the other arguments that the appellees made. The other two arguments that they've made in their brief are strictly issues, in my view, in disputing the trial court's determination of fact. This court, as you know, Your Honors, is bound by the factual findings of the trial court, unless they are clearly erroneous. This record is replete of evidence at and near the time of MMI as to the fact that Ms. Carlson used a cane for ambulation. She had a permanent handicap parking. Recitations of her symptoms of pain, her ability on observations on the date of MMI by Dr. LaHolt, October 8th of 2015. The record amply supports the determination of the trial court that Ms. Carlson indeed had a permanent total loss of earning power. For those reasons, we would ask that the court affirm the trial court's award. There are no questions. This concludes my argument.
Thank you very much. You. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 19 seconds. Mr. Mack.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to address the notion that that Ms. Carlson had reached maximum medical improvement prior to the stroke. Of course, that is the way that the trial judge opined. He opined that the injured worker had reached maximum medical improvement on the date of Dr. LaHolt's independent medical evaluation, which occurred on October 8th of 2015. The problem that I have in saying that the court was clearly wrong in determining that there was sufficient evidence to determine that the claimant was permanently and totally disabled is a lot of the evidence of restrictions and impairment that are authored by the doctor actually pertain to the injured worker's impairment and restrictions before the date of maximum medical improvement. So the court says October 8, 2015, yet it uses the restrictions of Dr. Matthew Reichmeier, who had not seen Ms. Carlson since October 24th of 2014, in to determine that the injured worker was permanently and totally disabled. After Dr. Reichmeier had saw that patient on that actual date, he had taken the claimant off of work, Ms. Carlson, and had referred her to Dr. Essay for more injections. These restrictions should be considered temporary restrictions, and similar with Dr. Diamond's rating.
Did the employer offer any evidence of a different date of MMI?
Your Honor, no. Based on case law, the argument at trial was based on the case law of this court that the date that the injured worker could get no better or no worse under Rodriguez versus Hirschbeck Motors, the court was, or we asked the court to adopt the date of the stroke.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day then is State